Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. Please consider donating or purchasing a transcript by going to our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. You'll help support other documentaries and podcasts such as this. We know that in the Bible, many prophets practice polygamy. On the other hand, modern Christians and Jews mostly condemn the practice. What are the theological justifications of polygamy? Dr. Brian Hales will answer that question for us. We'll also talk about a new book by Carolyn Pearson talking about polygamy in the eternities. What does Brian Hales think about this? Okay, so let's we can leave Fanny alone, I guess, there for a while. Now, there was a big break in polygamous marriages. How long was that break, and who was the next wife?
Do you know, there is some evidence for Joseph marrying plural wives between 1836 and 1841. I think it's dubious, but Fawn Brody, in her book No Man Knows My History, has several names there. But the evidence isn't totally clear that it didn't happen. I don't believe it happened, because in order for it to happen, I think Joseph had to build up a little bit of the theology of sealing. So, and it, there just was no real timeline for this to happen. I mean, Fawn Brody's version is just full of problems. I mean, it's bad scholarship, her timeline, and she's interpreting things wrong. But there's at least one quote saying that one of Joseph's wives was married, I think it was Lucinda Pendleton, I could be wrong, but was married before they got to Nauvoo. Again, no evidence to support that, but one late recollection from somebody who wasn't even a member of the church at the time. But for the most part, my interpretation is that there was no one he was not involved with anyone in a plural marriage between 1836 and 1841.
And it would make sense that he would take a break with Emma's reaction.
Well, that was what I was just going to say. I mean, Joseph probably got an ultimatum from Emma: if you ever do this again, we're done, or something. Because Emma was a strong personality, and if she didn't accept this came from God, despite the revelations, despite the Book of Mormon, you can certainly understand why Joseph would have been reticent to jump back in. There's multiple accounts of him not wanting to do it. And the critics just, you know, ignore them as prevarications. But I think that he really didn't want to do it, because he knew what Emma was going to say when she found out, and eventually she would. So, but we fast forward to 1840s, to late 1840s, and we find several people remembering, and we're dealing with very late accounts at this point. And there's been an article by Gary Verdura talking about how the marriages were actually in 1840. I think his reasoning is problematic, and I've responded to that. I think we're very solidly in 1841, and on April 5th, Joseph was sealed this time by Joseph B. Noble, but to his sister-in-law, and that was Louisa Beeman. I will add, though, Don Bradley is doing some research now, and he is actually pushing that marriage to April of 42. And if you look at the chronology, it fits a lot better in April of 42 than 1841, because what we find is, except for Louisa, Joseph is marrying Zinah Huntington and Priscinda Huntington and four or five women who all have legal husbands. Now we're getting into this polyandry question, and my theory is that Joseph was just being sealed for eternity to these women, in the hopes that the angel who came a second time sometime prior to that — we don't have a date for the second visit of the angel commanding polygamy, but I theorize that he came and said, do this, and so Joseph just was doing these eternity-only non-sexual marriages because he was hoping to please the angel and also not offend Emma, who wouldn't have had to worry too much about him because there was no sexuality involved. The evidence is not absolutely conclusive, but I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that this is actually what happened in those.
Okay. So I'm glad you went there, because I wanted to go to talk about polyandry. I know Dr. Lawrence Foster says that we shouldn't use that term. We should use a proxy husband, which would make sense, I guess, if there were no sexual relations. It does make you wonder, why are they doing these in the first place? Why would an angel command you to marry somebody and not have sexual relations? Because it does say that in DNC 132, it does say that one of the purposes is to raise up seed. So if you're not having sexual relations, You know, why would an angel command such a thing?
It's a good question, and sometimes the critics will say that's the only reason, is to multiply and replenish. It's verse 63. But actually, section 132 gives four reasons for plural marriage, and that's one of them. But I think there's another one that's much more important. Let me talk about the other two before we get to the most important one. It's as a part of the restoration of all things, and I'm blocking on the third one. The fourth one, though, the one that is the most important, is that, and it takes a little bit of history, but Joseph asks God about polygamy in verse 1. And then we find polygamy isn't mentioned until verse 32, 34. But what we find is the answer to the question about polygamy is that God is talking about eternal marriage. Verse 7 talks about one man who has the keys. And then verses 8 through 18 give us three examples about what happens to associations or marriages that are not sealed by the authority of that one man. There's three examples there. When does God give us examples? I mean, he's trying to teach a principle here. And even in verse 18, he tells us that if a man and a woman are married for time and all eternity, but if that marriage is not through the one man who holds the keys, it's not valid, neither of force when they're out of the world. So the Lord is putting three exclamation points behind verse 7 that says there's one man on earth at a time who has this authority. And then in verses 19 and 20, it tells us of a monogamous couple who live worthily and are sealed by this authority. Then they are exalted. Then they become gods, and their marriage continues after death. But it's talking just about a monogamous marriage through all of this. But in verses 16 and 17, it tells us that if a person dies and they are not sealed by this authority, then they remain singly and separately without exaltation in their saved condition to all eternity, telling us that every person will need to be sealed in an eternal marriage. And so plural marriage ostensibly could allow every worthy person, assuming there are more worthy women than men. And I've heard that that's a problem for some people. But go into any Christian congregation or Mormon congregation and just look at the gender. There's always more women than men. Always. So this is a principle that reaches beyond death. Far more important in my mind than multiply and replenish the earth, the idea. And I just was going to look up the third reason here.
So tell us about the four reasons in the Doctrine and Covenants for polygamy.
Just to reiterate, the easiest one is part of the restitution of all things. And if somebody asks you, why did Joseph do it? The easy answer is, well, he was a prophet restorer, and the old prophets did it, and he restored it. Okay, that's not entirely nuanced, and some would say isn't even correct. I think it is, generally. A second one is, it was a trial, and this is the one I couldn't remember. It presented a special trial. The Lord does do that. He gives different people at different times different kinds of trials. A third one was that was the one that I had talked a great deal about. It allows all men and women to enter into a marriage, even if it's as a plural wife. And then the third one was what we started with, the multiply and replenish the earth. Mm-hmm. And can I just add here, Rick, there's been a book written lately that assumes that eternal polygamy is a bad thing. And of course, on earth, polygamy is not fair. It's unequal. You could say it's sexist if you want, on earth. But I don't think that we know anything about eternal marriage, and we certainly don't know anything about eternal plural marriage. So to assume that that's a bad thing, that it victimizes women, and to assume that women should fear that, is to fear unknown things. And God has promised us everlasting joy, a fullness of joy. His plan is a plan of happiness. And I understand why even my own daughter is worried about this eternal polygamy idea. And she's told her husband, you're going to die before me because I'm not going to die before you and have you remarry, so I'm a polygamist in heaven. She's told him that. And I get that. But at the same time, God has told us, and this is not speculation, that it's a fullness of joy. It's eternal happiness. It's exaltation for those who attain it. And I think we have to just take faith in these things that are promised us and try not to fear the unknown. And it may still be hard, but it is additional faith. I understand that. But I believe that whatever it is, and I have no desire to be a polygamist here or there, but I do believe that a woman is not going to feel victimized in eternity if she attains exaltation. And I think we just have to hold on to that and have faith that that is true, and then trust God. So I don't agree with this idea that we know what eternal polygamy is, and that we know that it's bad, and that we should fear it here today. Mm-hmm.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Dr. Brian Hales. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about polyandry, the idea that a woman can have more than one husband. Did you know that Joseph Smith was secretly sealed to several women who were currently married to other men? We'll also ask about the idea that some have said that Joseph sent men on missions so that he could secretly marry their wives.
So even the one that appears to be a case where Joseph might have sent him on a mission, but then he waits a year. I mean, it doesn't make sense. But a year later, we have Joseph being sealed to Miranda. But again, we even have a second date. So we don't. And the second date is a signed affidavit, which we probably would consider to be more reliable than something that was just scrawled on a page of Joseph's journal, not in his handwriting, but in, I think, Thomas Bullock's. But again, that story is false. And yet it's a sound bite. It's all over the internet. We've got to kill it. It's wrong. It's false. Joseph did not send men on missions so he could marry their wives, according to any reliable documentation.
Click here to subscribe. Click here for a transcript. And over here, you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.